From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, September 19th, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Dempsey Challenge. Run, walk, or bike this September to help the Dempsey Center support those impacted by cancer. DempseyChallenge.org.
Maine's Attorney General says the state will not accept a proposed settlement from Purdue Pharma and its owners, the Sackler family, for its aggressive sales of the addictive opioid OxyContin. Mal Leary has details.
Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry says the proposed settlement, which comes in response to thousands of lawsuits against the company, falls short on a number of fronts. For one, it would allow the company to continue to make and sell OxyContin. Fry says the Sackler family should be required to pay out more in damages, since it made billions of dollars from sales of the drug for over a decade. Fry is urging other states to join Maine in rejecting the offer and to stay with the lawsuit. And so far, several states have announced their opposition. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The nonprofit organization whose offices were destroyed by a propane blast in Farmington is going to relocate for now. Western Maine Development Group is allowing Leap Inc. to use a former Barclays call center in Wilton. And the company that owns Hannaford and several other major grocery chains in the U.S. says it is phasing out certain harmful chemicals in the packaging of its store brand foods. Ahold Delhaize has announced that starting next year, it'll work with its suppliers to eliminate endocrine-disrupting chemicals like PFAS, BPA, and phthalates, along with other chemicals. Mike Beliveau is executive director of the Environmental Health Strategy Center. He says in making this commitment, the company is moving faster than government.
It's significant because it's the first major retail commitment in the United States to get these chemicals out of food packaging. And it's incumbent upon market leaders like Hannaford to take these actions because our federal chemical safety system is badly broken.
Maine was the first state in the nation this year to pass a bill that bans phthalates and PFAS chemicals from food packaging, which would take effect in 2022. The chemicals linked with a variety of health risks are often found in cans, plastic packaging, and the caps from glass jars. A spokesman for Hannaford says the company is responding to customers' desire for transparency and ingredients they can feel good about. In weather tonight, clear to partly cloudy skies with some fog and lows in the 30s and 40s. Tomorrow, sunny with highs in the high 60s to the high 70s. And on Saturday, mostly sunny with highs in the high 60s to the low 80s. A new report in the journal Science indicates the number of birds in North America has declined by several billion in the last 40 years. The findings released today suggest that bird numbers are declining more rapidly than had been thought, and researchers are pointing a finger at habitat loss and at climate change. Jennifer Mitchell has more.
Over the decades, the call of the wood thrush has meant the arrival of spring to the woods of Maine. It's just one of the species, however, experiencing sharp declines. According to a new study published in the journal Science, there are 3 billion fewer birds in North America now than there were in the 1970s. That's a loss of about 25% across most species.
It's kind of a gut punch for those of us who love birds.
Jeff Wells is vice president of boreal conservation for the National Audubon Society. He's based in Maine and says so many of the birds we take for granted here, such as the white-throated sparrow, various warblers, and redstarts, are losing numbers.
Some of the other great thrush songsters like veries and hermit thrushes in Maine that, you know, sort of hear them in the early mornings or evenings echoing across the landscape. But yeah, all of those species are among those that are in this 3 billion bird decline.
The research paints a more dire picture than a similar study conducted in 2016 by Canadian conservation group Partners in Flight, which estimated a loss of more than a billion birds over the past 40 years. The methodology of the new study, says Wells, included observation of migration density on weather radar, as well as more traditional counting methods. For those who not only study birds, but also make a living through them, the news is extremely unwelcome, but not surprising. Derek Lovitch is a bird guide and owner of Freeport Wild Bird Supply.
I remember growing up as a birder, the old guard, reminiscing about how it used to be. And there used to be so many more birds, or we'd come here on this weekend and it would always be so many more of this and that. I sound like those people now.
And Lovitch says there are also birds that have moved into Maine from elsewhere, perhaps being pushed out of their traditional range, responding to a changing climate, or following an invasive insect pest. Lovitch says just 15 years ago, seeing a red-bellied woodpecker or a Carolina wren was a big deal. Today, they're common for roughly half the state. Meanwhile, other species are all but gone.
Rusty blackbird is a bird that's declined by over 90%. I was so excited this summer. I saw my first breeding pair in Maine in probably 10 years. That bird has really been disappearing, and we're not quite sure why.
Researchers say the reasons behind these bird declines are complex and include loss of breeding habitat here in Maine, habitat fragmentation and disruption, loss of winter habitat, and climate change. Additionally, this month, a study conducted at the University of Saskatchewan suggests that songbirds are being harmed by certain neonicotinoid pesticides, substances also thought to be a culprit in declines of honeybees and other pollinators. Jeff Wells with the National Audubon Society says the latest study shows that North American birds are serving as a large-scale canary in the coal mine, and that it's now clear that the canaries are dying. But he says there are other examples that offer some hope, such as the resurgence of the wild turkey in Maine after it had completely disappeared after the 19th century.
We brought wild eagles back by changing laws and policies and bringing resources to the table. You know, that's the good news, and we all have the power to actually do something.
You can learn more about the new study published in the journal Science and its findings at 3billionbirds.org. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
Another impact of a warming climate is an increasing number of tick-borne diseases. Researchers say warmer winters and rising humidity have helped fuel the northward expansion of ticks' range. And as Patty White reports, changes in climate are also making Maine more hospitable for new species of ticks and the diseases they carry.
As many people do during the summer in Maine, Julia Marr and her family flocked to Sebago Lake this past July for a day on the water. They walked about a mile on a trail through woods and grass to get to the beach.
And when we got to the lake, I realized that I had a tick, a deer tick, on my arm, kind of the inside of my elbow.
She removed the tick and didn't think much of it. But 3 weeks later, Marr started to feel sick.
So I had a fever and just didn't feel myself. I didn't have a lot of energy, a lot of intense body aches, joint aches, headaches, and very intensive night sweats.
Marr figured she was hit with a bad case of the flu, and after a few days, she felt better. But within a week, the symptoms returned.
The flu does not return within a week, and so I figured it was probably something tick-borne.
She was right. Marr's doctor diagnosed her with anaplasmosis. She was prescribed antibiotics, and weeks later, she's feeling better, but she says she's still not at 100%. Marr is among the growing number of Mainers who are contracting anaplasmosis. It's the second most common tick-borne disease in the state behind Lyme, says Maine Center for Disease Control epidemiologist Sarah Robinson.
So anaplasmosis is the second most common. It tends to follow the same patterns that Lyme does. So right now the mid-coast area is the hardest hit, but we are seeing a northward and westward expansion of anaplasmosis as well.
In recent years, Maine has seen as many as 660 cases of anaplasmosis, up from just single cases in the early 2000s. Lyme disease has also been on an upward trend, growing from a few hundred cases more than a decade ago to a recent high of more than 1,800. These diseases have become more common as deer ticks have spread across the state since they were first documented in the mid-80s, says Chuck Lubelzik. He's a vector ecologist at the Maine Medical Center Research Institute's Vector-Borne Disease Lab.
And now the expansion of those ticks have gone from York County to covering the lower third of the state, where they're now established and endemic, to outlying populations in Arista County near Holton, and also in Down East Maine near Grand Lake Stream and Callis and Eastport.
The spread of the deer tick in Maine has been made possible by several factors, says Lubelzik. One is the abundance of deer, the key host for the tick's reproductive stage, when females produce up to 3,000 eggs at a time. Maine is also heavily forested, which is prime habitat for ticks. And changes in climate also favor ticks, says Dr. Susan Elias of the Vector-Borne Disease Lab.
If you think about the northern tier of the state, it's still colder than the southern tier of the state, but it has been warming relatively faster, and so that's going to be helpful to ticks.
Earlier ice outs and snow melts favor ticks in the wintertime, says Elias, and higher humidity favors them in the summertime. Chuck Lubelzik says these changes in climate also roll out the welcome mat for other species.
One which we don't think has reached Maine yet, but is potentially on its way, is one called the Lone Star tick.
Lone Star ticks have been found in Maine, dropped by migratory birds from the south. Historically, they haven't been able to survive the winter, says Lubelzik, but that's changing.
This tick is slowly moving its way up the eastern seaboard. It's now established in Cape Cod and in southeastern Massachusetts, where it wasn't there a decade ago. And it does seem to be moving up the coast. This tick, if it does arrive and get established in Maine, is going to be a game changer because it is highly aggressive.
Whereas deer ticks are passive pursuers of their blood meal, latching onto whatever delicious-looking creature walks by, Lubelzik says the Lone Star tick actually pursues its host.
I have heard anecdotally from people that have it established in their areas that you can hear the woods rustling with these ticks. They're so abundant.
And they can transmit several diseases. They can even cause a severe allergy to red meat. The Lone Star is just one of several new ticks and pathogens that researchers are watching out for, says Susan Elias.
There's just a race on to keep up with the various species of ticks as their ranges expand and as they move around the globe, and to keep up with the pathogens that they carry.
With no indication that these vector-borne diseases will abate, Sarah Robinson of the Maine CDC says they pose a challenge to public health.
They're tricky because there's not a single cure, a single prevention message that is going to prevent people from getting sick. So that's our messaging, is that people need to take precautions and they need to protect themselves.
Which means following all the precautions, wearing repellent and protective clothing, doing daily tick checks, and Lubelzik says making your property inhospitable to ticks, because most tick-borne diseases are acquired around the home.
We're not talking about you conquering ticks across the continent. Just take care of it on your property. Which is kind of manageable.
Clean up dead leaves, he says. Remove invasive plant species such as Japanese barberry. When reforesting, plant spruce, a traditional habitat in Maine that isn't conducive to ticks. And remember that ticks are active well into the fall. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
This week, we have been reporting on climate change and its effects on Maine. But there are those who dispute that climate change is even a thing or that it's caused by human activity. To help depolarize the debate, the Nature Conservancy has created a how-to guide for talking with family, friends, or colleagues who doubt the reality of climate change. State Director Kate Dempsey told Maine Public's Ed Morin that it's about conversation, not conquest.
So when I talk about conversations, I'm talking about things that most of us do probably in a normal day anyway, which is we say, hey, winter's coming. When do I get to start fishing? When do I get to go ice fishing? And if you've been around a long time, you might say, well, you know, hopefully by after Thanksgiving, but before the new year, I'm going to get out on the ice. And, you know, you begin to then have conversation about when ice is in. And then what I have found when I start those conversations is that someone might say, well, I've noticed ice is coming in much later than it used to. And then that's a good way to begin a conversation about climate change. My job in that conversation is not to convince you that I'm right, or that your job isn't to convince me that you're right. But it's to begin to have common language and a common understanding of what we're experiencing here in Maine. And then we can together say, what's that going to mean for our communities that rely on smelting? Or what's it going to mean for the snowmobile industry? and things like that. So it begins to move us out of a debate and into solution space.
So I am holding a brochure. It's a how-to guide called Let's Talk Climate. And in it, you offer four simple tips. What are these tips?
Yeah, so simple tips for starting the conversation are meet people where they are. So that means ask open-ended questions. You actually want to be sincere in learning from the person you're talking with. What's their experience? What's most important is number two, is that connection is really as important as what are the facts. So remember when grandma used to take us to the beach and we would have to bring, you know, two layers and a blanket to wrap up in. And we don't have to do that anymore. The third tip is the goal is a conversation, not a conquest. Many of us are trained to try to prove our point and prove that we're right. Again, that's not what the purpose of this is. The purpose is to have commonality. And as basic as it sounds is, you know, the less we can all call each other names and focus on what is common between us, the more we're going to gain together.
At the same time, ultimately, you're hoping to change some minds here, right? I'm looking at the goal is conversation, not conquest. That's tip number three. But would hope that people would cease being climate change skeptics, would you not?
Yeah, well, that's a great point. We know that most people are not climate change skeptics, but that what we hear from a variety of sources is that skepticism. And so the first step is making sure we all understand that most of us see that the climate is changing and that we need to act. And so you're right, that Ed, that the next point is what kind of action we can take. And what we also know is that for politicians to act, they want to know that the people that they represent believe and want them to act. And so here in Maine, that means that whether you live in Presque Isle or you live in Kittery, or in Rangeley, that these are important conversations, because in the end it is our politicians that will take votes and take action, but so can each of us. And so that's why we try to get it start kind of away from the politics and more into the community element of it.
But ultimately, what you're thinking about is that there might be a political answer for this if enough people, in fact, start to believe that there is human intervention climate change?
We know that that is one piece of the puzzle. Politics and politicians are one piece. But each of us, in whatever world we live in, whether we are a fisherman, a logger, a teacher, a lawyer, working as a cashier, each of us can take actions and be part of the solution. And I think that's what we kind of forget, that there's opportunity for us as a state to increase economic benefits, to think about what we want to be as a state going forward, and every person is going to matter to finding those solutions. So political solutions are one piece of the puzzle, but there are many other pieces that are vital.
Kate Dempsey is State Director of the Nature Conservancy in Maine. She spoke with Maine Public's Ed Morin. These stories have been part of a week-long reporting project covering climate now by Maine Public and more than 300 other news outlets around the world. The series comes in advance of the United Nations Climate Action Summit on Monday, September 23rd in New York. More information is at mainepublic.org/climatenow. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a look at how Maine is preparing for rising sea levels. I'm Nora Flaherty.